Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today, we'll have news about new steps approved by San Diego County's Board of Supervisors to address the opioid addiction and overdose crisis in our region. Then, we'll have the latest forecast from the National Weather Service on a major storm moving into our region, bringing potential flooding, heavy rains, and snow in our mountains. Hear why California Attorney General Rob Bonta is opposing the proposed merger of grocery giants Albertsons and Kroger. On our Capitol Report, President Joe Biden is warning that democracy is on the ballot this election, with Congress hanging in the balance, and he's urging all Americans to oppose candidates who support political violence or who are election deniers. This comes in the wake of that violent attack on Speaker Nancy Pelosi's husband. A homeless man near an encampment in Santee has died on a trail near his camp under suspicious circumstances, and we'll have details. Motorists on Interstate 8 between Alpine and Pine Valley may be facing some long delays over the next year and a half due to roadway improvements underway. The Mother Goose Parade, one of East County's most popular holiday seasonal events, has been canceled for 2022. Find out why on today's show. The City of Lemon Grove will be matching gift cards for local merchants using federal COVID relief dollars to help both businesses and consumers. On Green Scene, learn how the state is gearing up to boost jobs as it ramps up use of electric vehicles and builds more EV charging stations. On Tribal Beat, hear about an Indigenous feast being planned at the Hamul Casino's rooftop venue featuring a celebrity Native American chef. From Public News Service today, we'll have some updates nationally from the campaign trail, concerns about foreign election interference, and issues raised over an increase in hate speech on Twitter since Elon Musk took over the social media platform. La Mesa residents are asking why the city never notified neighbors before its planning commission approved a 5-story apartment building on the site of a burned building in the city's historic downtown district. Campo Road in Spring Valley is on the verge of getting a major revitalization, and we'll have details. Then on Sounds of History, we'll be re-airing one of our Best of East County episodes today, our interview with the curator of the Guy B. Woodward Museum up in Ramona. And finally, if you have not yet voted, we'll have information for you on voting centers open Monday and Tuesday, as well as an update from the San Diego County Registrar of Voters Office on turnout so far. So, stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
San Diego's Board of Supervisors voted unanimously on October 25th to approve a plan proposed by the supervisors Nathan Fletcher and Joel Anderson to use an expected $100 million in settlement money from lawsuits with pharmaceutical companies to address the opioid crisis in the region. Last year, over 900 San Diego County residents died from opioid overdoses, a 54% increase from the previous year. Of those deaths, more than 800 were due to fentanyl overdoses, over a 400% increase in the past 2 years. Chairman Nathan Fletcher called the board's action a very important step in the fight against the opioid epidemic. He added, "By passing this opioid settlement framework, our county is now ready to take action quickly to combat this crisis by investing millions of dollars in best practices to help San Diegans overcome addiction and save lives." Supervisors Fletcher and Anderson proactively engaged with the medical community, hospitals, first responders, social justice and equity advocates, and drug treatment specialists to gather input from more than 200 people. The resulting opioid settlement framework includes expanding access to medically assisted treatment, putting wellness advocates in hospitals, providing wraparound services and housing, drug disposal strategies, and public information campaigns. It also includes harm reduction and prevention strategies, as well as social supports and services. Some programs should be implemented immediately as funds become available and other programs will roll out later. The county has inpatient and outpatient treatment services available throughout the region now that can help San Diegans with substance use disorders. If you need help, you can call the San Diego County Access and Crisis Line, 888-724-7240, or 211 San Diego. Both are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
If you're going to be out and about the next few days, you may want to carry an umbrella, and if heading to the mountains, be sure to carry chains. The second Pacific storm of the season will bring cold weather and heavy rainfall with potential for atmospheric river conditions this week, the National Weather Service predicts. While rainfall early Monday will be light, heavy rains and potential flooding are forecast starting Tuesday, with snowfall down to 4,500 feet. Up to 5 inches of precipitation is forecast in mountain areas, with up to 2 inches in coastal and valley areas. The storm comes on the heels of last week's early winter storm, which dusted local mountains with snow. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
California Attorney General Rob Bonta has joined attorneys general from the District of Columbia and Illinois in asking the D.C. District Court to temporarily block Albertson's planned $4 billion payment of a special dividend to shareholders. The action is due to concern that the payment would dramatically hamper Albertson's ability to compete while a proposed merger between Albertson's and Kroger Grocery Corporations is under scrutiny by federal regulators. The complaint follows a letter sent to Albertson's and Kroger in late October, in which the attorneys general argued that the planned payout would substantially deplete Albertson's cash flow as inflation drives up prices and an economic downturn appears imminent. The attorneys general seek to delay the payout while review of the proposed merger is ongoing. Kroger is the second largest grocer by market share in the United States, behind Walmart, and Albertsons is fourth after Costco. Kroger also owns numerous other grocery store chains, including here in California, Ralph's, Fred Meyer, and Food for Less. Albertsons holdings in California include Safeway, Vons, Pavilions, and more. Attorney General Bonta states, Albertsons and Kroger operate nearly 5,000 stores between them, including hundreds in California. As inflation drives up grocery prices, a decrease in competition has the potential to be devastating for hardworking California families and for those who work at these stores, he says. This proposed merger is far from a done deal, making Albertson's decision to give away one-third of its market cap very concerning, he continued, adding, I urge the court to delay this payout to allow for a thorough consideration of its impacts on Albertson's ability to compete while the proposed merger is under review. Albertsons and Kroger supply food and other necessities to millions of people throughout the U.S. and employ more than 700,000 workers. The state attorneys general aim to ensure that the proposed merger of these grocery giants complies with federal and state antitrust laws and does not result in higher prices for consumers, suppressed wages for workers, or other anti-competitive effects. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Marie Johnson.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. This is Miriam Raftery with a Capitol Report. President Joe Biden delivered a powerful speech in Washington, D.C. last Wednesday, warning that U.S. democracy is at risk. He denounced political violence in the wake of a violent attack on Speaker Nancy Pelosi's husband, Paul, who suffered a skull fracture in an attack by a hammer-wielding assailant who broke into the couple's San Francisco home seeking to harm the speaker. President Biden urged all Americans not to vote for anyone who condones political violence or won't speak against it. He also urged opposition to anyone who supports voter suppression, as well as candidates who have said they will refuse to accept the will of the voters if they don't win their elections.
We must, with one overwhelming, unified voice, speak as a country and say there's no place for voter intimidation or political violence in America, whether it's directed at Democrats or Republicans. No place, period. No place ever. I speak today near Capitol Hill, near the U.S. Capitol, the citadel of our democracy. I know there's a lot at stake in these midterm elections, from our economy, the safety of our streets, to our personal freedoms, the future of health care, Social Security, Medicare. It's all important. But we'll have our differences. We'll have our difference of opinion. And that's what it's supposed to be. But there's something else at stake. Democracy itself. So today, I appeal to all Americans, regardless of party, to meet this moment of national and generational importance. We must vote, knowing what's at stake and not just the policy of the moment, but institutions that have held us together as we sought a more perfect union are also at stake. We must vote knowing who we have been, what we're at risk of becoming. You know, American democracy is under attack because the defeated former president of the United States refuses to accept the results of the 2020 election. He refuses to accept the will of the people. He refuses to accept the fact that he lost. He has abused his power and put the loyalty to himself before loyalty to the Constitution. And he's made a big lie, an article of faith in the MAGA Republican Party, the minority of that party. We can't ignore the impact this is having on our country. It's damaging, it's corrosive, and it's destructive. And I want to be very clear, this is not about me. It's about all of us. It's about what makes America, America. Make no mistake, democracy is in the ballot for all of us. We must remember that democracy is a covenant. We need to start looking out for each other again, seeing ourselves as we, the people, not as entrenched enemies. This is a choice we can make. Disunion and chaos are not inevitable. Because democracy is in the ballot, we have to remember that even in our darkest moments, there are fundamental values and beliefs that unite us as Americans. And they must unite us now. What are they? Well, I think first, we believe the vote in America is sacred, to be honored, not denied. There's an alarming rise in the number of our people in this country condoning political violence or simply remaining silent, because silence is complicity. The disturbing rise of voter intimidation, the pernicious tendency to excuse political violence, or at least trying to explain it away. We can't allow this sentiment to grow. We must confront it head on now.
Tune in on election night, Tuesday, November 8th, to KNSJ 89.1 FM. The station will be carrying live national election night coverage from 6 to 9 p.m. West Coast time with Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! After 9 p.m., you can hear state and local election reports, including an update from East County Magazine editor Miriam Raftery on the outcomes of races in San Diego's East County. Again, that's on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
San Diego Sheriff's homicide detectives are investigating the death of a 66-year-old man found dead on October 30th on a trail near a transient camp in Santee. According to the Sheriff's Department, the man was a known transient who had trauma to his upper torso. Deputies and firefighter paramedics responded to a call for help at 2 a.m. Deputies found the victim face down on the dirt trail. Paramedics did CPR, but were unable to save the man who died at the scene. Anyone with information about this is asked to call the homicide unit at 858-285-6330, after hours at 858-565-5330. 5200. You can remain anonymous by calling Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477. The death was the second suspicious death near a homeless encampment in recent weeks. On August 1st, 50-year-old Thomas Morena was found dead at a pond in Lakeside. The identity of the man who died in Santee has not yet been released, pending notification of family. Cause of both deaths will be determined by the county medical examiner. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
Expect traffic delays if you're driving between Alpine and Pine Valley for the foreseeable future. Caltrans crews working on the Interstate 8 pavement replacement and road improvement project from Viejas Creek to Pine Valley will be reconfiguring the lane reductions through the construction site, taking motorists from three lanes down to just one lane for approximately 3 miles starting this week, and it won't be completed until early 2024. Most of the work will take place on weekdays and overnight. The five-stage project's construction schedule is subject to change due to weather conditions, traffic incidents, or other unforeseen reasons. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The Mother Goose Parade in El Cajon, one of San Diego County's longest-running and most beloved holiday events, has been canceled for this year. Parade organizers had looked forward to returning after cancellations during the pandemic. But Patty Tuttle Shyrock, executive director and past president of the Mother Goose Parade Association, announced that due to unprecedented staffing, logistics, and supply chain issues, we are unable to deliver the high standards of entertainment and joy that the Mother Goose Parade has brought to tens of thousands of families and residents over the decades. We did not want to produce an event that was anything less than outstanding, she said. Originally produced in 1947, the Mother Goose Parade is San Diego County's largest parade and has become an annual staple for generations. Traditionally held the Sunday before Thanksgiving, the parade is filled with floats, bands, equestrian performers, huge balloons, and more. It's been hailed as one of the largest community parades west of the Mississippi. Fortunately, Shyrock promised that the Mother Goose Parade will return next year and thanked sponsors and community champions who are helping to build excitement for the 2023 event. You can make a donation to help support the Mother Goose Parade Association, a nonprofit group, at mothergooseparade.org. In the meantime, you can watch the 2020 and 2021 virtual parades, as well as see photos and videos of previous years' live parades at mothergooseparade.org. Reporting for East County Magazine in El Cajon on KNSJ, this is Marie Johnson.
Small businesses are struggling to recover from pandemic shutdowns, while consumers are feeling the financial pinch of inflation. So on November 1st, Lemon Grove's City Council voted to address both problems. The city will use federal relief funds to match residents' purchase of gift cards up to $150 for local businesses, so that $150 spent by a resident will be doubled to a $300 value. City Manager Lydia Romero calls the Buy One, Get One Free gift card program a win for the city, a win for the shop, and a win for folks that are using the gift cards. The city aims to roll out the program in time for Small Business Saturday on November 26th, a date when consumers nationally are encouraged to shop locally. City staff is reaching out to businesses, including retailers, restaurants, and providers of services such as hairdressers and fitness studios. Now, there are some limitations. Gift cards will only be available for small, local, and independently owned businesses in Lemon Grove, not corporate chains or multi-franchise-owned businesses. Businesses must have a physical storefront location, a valid city business license, and no pending code enforcement actions. Now, before you make plans to party hardy with your gift cards, be aware that purchases of alcohol, tobacco, and cannabis products with gift cards will be prohibited. The gift cards will be digital, and you can access them on your smartphone. The Shop Local Digital Gift Card Program is paid for through $150,000 of funds allocated to Lemon Grove from the Federal American Rescue Plan Act, or ARPA. In addition, Up to $12,500 will go to HGL Companies, a consulting company, as well as for marketing costs that will be overseen by the East County Chamber of Commerce and fees collected by YFTI, the company running the program. This gift card program is being used in several other cities, including Murrieta, Hawthorne, San Leandro, and Southgate in California, among others. A staff report on the program says small businesses in Lemon Grove continue to struggle 2 years after the pandemic began and are now dealing with rising inflation. According to the report, small businesses account for a supermajority of the businesses in Lemon Grove. But nationwide, over 200,000 small businesses closed permanently in 2020 due to the COVID-19 pandemic, and others continue to struggle amid labor shortages, supply chain issues, and rising costs. So the city is hoping that its new gift card stimulus program will help put some much-needed jingle into Lemon Grove businesses' cash registers just in time for this holiday season, money that also helps provide sales tax revenues to fund city services. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
California will be building out a huge network of electric vehicle chargers over the next few years, so efforts to train thousands of electricians are underway. In 2020, the state legislature passed a bill to require at least one quarter of certified electricians on publicly funded projects to pass an 18-hour course known as the Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Training Program, or EVITP. Dr. Carol Zabin, an economist at the UC Berkeley Labor Center, says those who get through the course earn a credential for jobs related to climate investment.
It's a skills upgrade program to appropriately install a really important new technology that will help us electrify our transportation system and address climate change.
Only state-certified electricians qualify to take the course, which costs about $275. The program was launched in 2012 after a series of reports of electric cars catching fire. The Electric Vehicle Charging Association initially opposed the requirement before withdrawing its opposition in 2020. Reed Addis manages the industry group.
We are still very cranky about this policy approach. Mm-hmm. We don't know of shoddy electrical work or shoddy installation work that would require this. This is a solution in search of a problem.
Brett Beard, an EVITP-trained electrician, says the fast-charging equipment of the future will use much higher voltage, so training will be crucial to make sure installations are safe and reliable, both for workers and EV drivers.
Some are going to be up into the thousands soon, so having the EVITP is going to save lives.
Mark Boom with the Natural Resources Defense Council sees the program as a way to maintain job quality standards at a time when the move away from fossil fuels could mean fewer middle-class jobs at refineries, power plants, and in the auto industry.
That transition is not going to be complete unless there are good, high-quality jobs that come along with it. Then you can show that a clean economy is better than the dirty economy that we had.
This story was produced with original reporting from Jessica Goodhart for Capital and Maine as part of the Solutions Journalism Network. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
La Mesa is facing pushback over new signs asking the public not to support panhandling, Times of San Diego reports. The city has characterized the signs as needed to reduce homelessness and encourage those on the streets to utilize services instead. The signs direct people to call the city's homeless outreach and mobile engagement team and provide the phone number, email, and website. But a panhandler named John told a reporter that he's a Vietnam veteran and isn't homeless. He says he lives with his brother and has food, but panhandles because he needs money to pay his bills. "I have a room," he said. "That's it." La Mesa City Manager Greg Humora said two recent signs were installed October 18th, one on a Jackson Drive median near Fletcher Parkway, and the other near the Costco parking lot at Marengo and Fletcher Parkway. Someone promptly covered up the Marengo sign with a cardboard box. After a Public Works employee removed it, the next day the sign was covered up with a wig. The other sign, which read, please do not support panhandling, promptly had the word not defaced. Similar signs were torn down completely on Dallas Street and Amaya Drive. Critics aren't confined to street people. La Mesa Councilman Bill Bauer told Times of San Diego, I don't support installing these signs. We need more compassion and less bureaucracy, especially for our homeless. City Manager Humora said staff developed the signs, though the city council was aware of them. La Mesa got the idea from neighboring El Cajon, which has used similar signs for the past 5 years. Humora said the anti-panhandling program won't be expanded, and he doesn't know if any more signs will be put up. Martha Sullivan, an advocate for the homeless with San Diego Housing Emergency Alliance, said she's not aware of any data on whether the signs work, but added, poor people should not be punished for trying to eat. Sullivan said that if local governments wish to reduce panhandling, they should collaborate with other local governments to supply sufficient food, housing, physical and mental health treatment, including addiction services and long-term care for elderly and or disabled residents. Former La Mesa Mayor Art Madrid said he thinks the signs are insulting, offensive, and demeaning. He said, adding that he can remember a La Mesa councilman whose son was homeless, as well as the son of an El Cajon mayor who was homeless. As for John, the Vietnam veteran panhandler, he says he's thinking of moving to another state now, but he notes that California already has laws prohibiting panhandling within 500 feet of a freeway ramp, as well as banning panhandlers from accosting anyone or aggressively soliciting donations. How does he know? He says he was an El Cajon police officer back in the 1960s. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is John Tidwell.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
This is the East County Magazine Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
This is Marie Johnson with East County Magazine's Tribal Beat Report. On Saturday, November 19th, Amul Casino's rooftop venue will welcome Chef Sean Sherman, founder and CEO of The Sous Chef, for a one-of-a-kind culinary event featuring modern Native American foods. Internationally renowned for advancing indigenous cuisine, Chef Sean Sherman will guide guests through a three-course curated meal exclusively prepared for the evening. Chef Sean Sherman of the Oglala Lakota tribe is internationally recognized as a caterer, educator, cookbook author, and restaurant owner. He has extensively studied Native American farming techniques, wild food usage and harvesting, land stewardship, salt and sugar making, hunting, fishing, food preservation, Native American migration histories, and elemental cooking techniques to revitalize interest in indigenous foods with a contemporary twist. He's shared his knowledge at the United Nations, Yale University, the Culinary Institute of America, and more. He's also won numerous awards, including the 2018 James Beard Award for Best American Cookbook, the 2019 James Beard Leadership Award, and the James Beard Award for Best New Restaurant in June 2022. Mary Cheeks, president and general manager of Hamul Casino, calls Chef Sherman an absolute visionary with an extraordinary talent, adding, We're so honored to welcome him and offer San Diego the opportunity to be a part of his mission to revive indigenous foods and ancestral knowledge in today's world. There will be two seatings for the event on November 5th at 5 p.m. and again at 7:30 p.m. with tickets available at hamulcasino.com/Chef Sherman.
More than 480,000 voters in San Diego County had already returned their mail ballots as of 9 a.m. Sunday morning, according to the County Registrar of Voters Office. More than 1.9 million mail ballots were sent to every registered voter in the county. The registrar is predicting a 60% to 65% county turnout for Tuesday's election. The number of registered voters in the county includes 1.9 million voters. Of those, about 800,000 of them are Democrats, 519,000 are Republicans, nearly 500,000 are nonpartisan, and about 119,000 are other parties. There's a total of 218 vote centers open across the county, both today and tomorrow, Election Day. Voters can still use their mail ballots as long as they are placed in a drop box or postmarked by Election Day. And if you want to know where your vote centers are located near you, you can go to sdvote.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. Next up, we have 3 minutes of national news headlines from Public News Service on the upcoming election and more.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The only way to save democracy is if we together fight for it. And it starts with electing people who know you, who see you, who care about you.
The final weekend before Election Day, heavy hitters like former President Barack Obama are on the road. Obama spoke in Pennsylvania for Democratic U.S. Senate candidate John Fetterman.
Send me to D.C. And I'll be that 51st vote to eliminate the filibuster.
Lieutenant Governor Fetterman says filibuster reform would let Democrats protect abortion access and voting rights. But he's in a tight race with Republican celebrity doctor and patent medicine pitchman Mehmet Oz.
I believe we're the land of opportunity. I believe we can have a budget that works without recklessly spending our kids' money. I believe we can have an all-of-the-above energy policy.
Oz rally Saturday was headlined by former President Donald Trump, who again implied he'll run in 2024.
I promise you, in the very next very, very, very short period of time, you're going to be so happy. Okay.
The Republican National Committee chair Sunday told CNN that if Trump does run, they can't pay the legal bills in his numerous criminal and civil cases. But the former president might run just to support his claim that the investigations are politically motivated. In Georgia, Democratic Senator Raphael Warnock has an edge over his Republican challenger, the retired football player Herschel Walker. That state's Republican Governor Brian Kemp has a distinct lead over challenger Stacey Abrams, but the Democrat is not giving up hope.
2.5 million votes cast. That is more than we've seen in a midterm ever. Well, I love y'all too, but I need y'all to love us a little bit more because we got more work to do.
In Arizona, the FBI is investigating a white powder mailed to Republican candidate for governor Carrie Lake's headquarters. Lake says her staff regularly faces threats.
4-inch screws drilled into our tires so that our tires would blow out on the road after events. We're living in dangerous times.
Lake has a polling lead over Democratic Secretary of State Katie Hobbs, whose campaign office was burglarized a couple of weeks ago. The latest national generic congressional polls show Republicans with a narrow lead. The New York Times reports foreign actors are again trying to stoke political division here. Cybersecurity firms say Russian bots are promoting disinformation and saying the U.S. is wasting money by supporting Ukraine. Twitter may delay charging for verified accounts until after the midterms. New CEO Elon Musk says the $8 monthly charge will help fight spam and improve content.
If your payment verified with a blue checkmark, then you'll be prioritized.
Several civil rights organizations are calling on advertisers to boycott Twitter over concerns about rising anti-Semitism and hate. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find RE Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
This is Miriam Raftery with a local government report from La Mesa. At La Mesa City Council meeting on October 11th, angry residents voiced concern over a proposed 5-story, 64-unit apartment complex proposed to be built in the heart of the city's village. The building would be erected on the same land where the historic Randall Lamb building burned down during a riot after the May 20th racial justice protests in the wake of George Floyd's tragic death. The Planning Commission approved the five-story apartment project on September 21st. There was a 10-day appeal period, but nobody filed an appeal to ask the council to overturn the approval. But some residents say they never knew about the project until it was too late. Resident after resident testified that the new apartment building would change the character of La Mesa. Ray Abbott, who's been living in the city for 30 years, said, "This development makes me sick. I personally moved here largely because of the village and the attraction of the village. I'll be spending less money on the village because there will be less parking," he predicted. Concerns over limited parking were raised by many La Mesa residents. Mayoral candidate Christina Licio, who works in the village, testified that the project is, quote, "changing the historic heart of La Mesa." She called the project the wrong fit for the village and terrible for our community. The former council member added, "I hope that in the future everyone up on the council looks at land use patterns, how to protect communities, and what you should be doing to incorporate affordable housing, housing with the existing communities." Council members Jack Hsu and Bill Baber asked how the 64-unit complex might affect the city's parking. Baber said the complex would be located next to a public parking structure and that it's likely that tenants would use those parking spaces meant for the public. A resident said those spaces are also used for the weekly farmers market and big events such as Oktoberfest, so this is problematic. The developer is utilizing incentives and waivers of development standards allowed under state law for parking, building height, and upper story setbacks. The parking to be provided for new tenants will be just one half of a parking space per unit. Councilmember Hsu asked if there was any data indicating how many future tenants plan on using public transit, but no data was provided. Before the design review ratification was discussed, the City Council decided to have Councilmember Laura Lothian recuse herself from that portion of the meeting, causing disapproval among some in the audience. Since Lothian rents an office space for her realty business less than 300 feet from the site, Councilmember Baber asked Attorney Glenn Sabine if that qualifies as a conflict of interest. After a 5-minute recess, Lothian did recuse herself from the meeting. Such recusals are customary. Other La Mesa council members have recused in the past from voting on projects close to where they live. However, the action angered some present. Lothian was the only council member who asked why neighboring La Mesa property owners were not notified about this project. Before recusing herself, she stated, "I never saw any notification. It sounds like the ship has sailed and this apartment complex is coming. I know that when I talk to La Masons, there is a resistance to more and more apartment buildings." Abbott told the council, "You throw out the one person that voiced any opposition to this. The Planning Commission gets up and says this is a done deal, so there really is no agenda item from what I can see. It's just a sham." Councilmember Jack Hsu asked if the council was able to delay the project. He asked, "Are there any repercussions if we table this for another month or two?" Staff indicated that the development is already entitled and that the presentation was for the structure's design review ratifications only. The city has very little discretion on any government-issued waivers unless the structure poses a danger to the public. 8 of the apartment building's 64 units would be affordable rental units for those with very low income. Households earning 50% of the $106,900 area medium income for San Diego County are considered to be in that very low income bracket as of this year. The La Mesa City Council ultimately decided to withhold taking any action and will discuss the project further in future meetings, but not until after this week's election.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The Casa de Oro community in Spring Valley may be getting a major facelift. At its most recent meeting, the Valle de Oro Community Planning Group approved a pre-final Campo Road Corridor Revitalization Specific Plan, which calls for dramatically reconfiguring the area. The ambitious plan specifically calls for formation of a business improvement district and reconfiguring several blocks of Campo Road to include a roundabout, bringing in mixed-use buildings with businesses and residential, enhancing arts and culture with murals and more, adding bike paths, pedestrian-friendly areas, a center media with trees, angled parking, an event venue, and more, all near a brand-new county library that's planned. The plan will require approval ultimately by San Diego County supervisors. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society, bringing you the sounds of history.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, guest hosting the Sounds of History. recording on the road today in Ramona. We are at the Guy B. Woodward Museum in Ramona, which is a marvelous place, and it is my great pleasure today to introduce our special guest, Ken Woodward, who is the curator of the museum. Ken, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm very glad to be here.
Now, I understand that your own family has long roots in Ramona. Tell us a little bit about your own family history first, and then we'll talk about the museum.
Yes, my family came out of Kellogg, Iowa. They came to Ramona in 1896, and the whole family, aunts, uncles, grandfather, grandmother, kids, girlfriends, the whole group. Two of them, they were actually farmers and dairymen out of Kellogg, Iowa.
And so what brought them to California, and how did they get here?
Well, they had lived in Iowa for many, many years, and they were just simply getting tired of the harsh winters and trying to take care of their farms and cattle. And so the whole family just packed up and came westward. That was my great-grandfather and all of his brothers and sisters.
Now, I understand that your family has quite the history here in Ramona. Can you give us a couple of highlights?
Yes. My family, they were farmers and dairymen, and later, my dad and his six brothers and sisters became very attached to Ramona. They grew up here. My dad's brother became a very famous historical archaeologist and historian. And my dad moved on in the 1930s and became chief of police in Oceanside, where he finished his years.
Now, let's hear about the museum.
The primary purpose of the museum was to commemorate the old-timers in Ramona, and they came here, they began coming here in about 1870.
Now, Ken, I understand that when your father was putting this whole marvelous museum together with all these different buildings, that he got some help from somebody who had a lot of experience in stage set design. Tell us about that.
Yes, he was very fortunate. Mr. Bill Cowan had moved to Ramona, and he had retired, and Bill Cowan was actually worked for Walt Disney Studios, and he built sets and built towns for Walt Disney Studios. So when my dad got ready to begin building some of the old barns and everything, he was very glad to help.
Yeah, this really does look like you've been plopped down and reincarnated in the middle of the Old West here with all these wonderful buildings. The centerpiece of it is the Theophile Verlaki House.
Yes.
And that was built, I understand, in 1886.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about the history of the house and how it came to be built.
Yes. Theophile Verlaki, he was a Basque from southern France. And at the time he left France in 1870 to come to the New World, to make his living. The whole Verlaki family came in to New Orleans, and then he found his way in 1870 to San Diego. And he became very prominent in San Diego. He built several businesses there, became one of the largest wine producers in San Diego.
Wow, so Ramona's wine industry has roots that go all the way back to the 1800s. Very interesting. And today it's certainly a thriving business up here. What can people see if they go into the Verlaki house today?
Well, I always tell people that they need to understand that everything they see here on this property has all been donated, mainly because the museum is a nonprofit organization. And when they go into that beautiful home, and it is all adobe, and they will find it beautifully furnished with all donated furniture, with all kinds of books in the library, with all kinds of furnishings in throughout.
And there's also a doctor's office. Tell us about that.
And there's a really interesting doctor's office. One of the bedrooms has been converted into a doctor's office. And that is, we have very old medical equipment that actually goes back to the 1800s that doctors have been donating to the museum. And it's really fascinating to see these old pieces of equipment.
There's also some very ornate furnishings. There's a fabulous antique grand piano in there, an old pump organ, a Victrola. And in one of the back bedrooms, I understand there's a bedroom set with an interesting history, too, very ornate.
Yes, the bedroom set is brought in to the museum in 1980, And this lady came in and said, I'd like to donate this beautiful bedroom set. It was built in 1840 back in Connecticut. But she said, you need to know who I am. She said, first of all, I'm part of the Yale family, the producers of the Yale Lock Company, and my great-great-grandfather in 1840 was the person who put together the Yale Lock Company.
Now, there's a lot more than just a vintage home on this property, however. You have amassed an amazing collection of some of the original buildings here in Ramona. Folks, if you come out here to the museum, the Guy B. Woodward Museum, you can see a vintage schoolhouse, a blacksmith shop, a barn, buggies, all kinds of interesting buildings, covered wagon, and also a jail. Now, I understand there's a really colorful history behind that jail. Tell us about it.
The jail was actually built in San Diego about 1890, and the jail was brought up here, 7 tons of iron, brought up to Ramona, and installed as the Ramona Jail. And then it, in the 1930s, it disappeared. And
so the jail was stolen?
No. The county of San Diego started using it for a dynamite storage, and it was found in a canyon and brought back to the museum.
Now, I understand that your mother used to have a job related to the jail.
Actually, that was my grandmother. And my grandmother, back in the early late 1800s, her job was to feed the prisoners, and she got 15 cents a day to bring them broth in.
And it has now been restored and brought back here to Ramona, and you can see it if you come out to visit the Guy B. Woodward Museum. Now, there's some other interesting buildings here. We're doing the interview actually sitting here in an old barn. What's the history of this?
Actually, it was one of my dad's ideas to bring in all of the old barns and all the old buildings that he could to the museum property. This barn was built in 1870. It was built by the Barnett family who came into Ramona from San Francisco area.
Looks like it's set up for meetings. Do you hold different kinds of meetings or events in here nowadays?
Yes. Every other month we have a potluck, and people are simply invited to bring something that they can share with everyone else. And we come in here and we have speakers on history and Ramona and things of this nature. It's really very good.
What fun. That's just an amazing resource to find. This place is a veritable treasure trove. As you walk through, you see antique dolls and vintage clothing and furnishings and tools. And there was a very interesting giant cook pot out there. Tell us about that.
The cook pot actually belonged to the Ortega family. And the Ortega family came to the valley in 1843. And they actually owned all 17,000 acres here in the valley.
So this was the family that received the land through the original Spanish land grant.
That's correct. And so the Ortegas proceeded to use the valley for farming all kinds of wheat and everything.
Now, of course, long before the original settlers came here, we had the Native Americans, the Kumeyaay people. I understand you have some Native American artifacts that people can see here as well.
Yes, the Kumeyaay Indians came to the valley 2,000 years ago, and we have some beautiful Indian artifacts, a whole display in the basement from that tribe.
Wow, I would love to take a look at that. And I understand, by the way, that the Kumeyaay now say they trace their history in the San Diego region back 10 to 12,000 years. Interesting, they've recently found some artifacts in some other areas that suggest they may have been here even a lot longer than that. There are also a lot of interesting vehicles here. I see some vintage buggies, you know, like horse-drawn buggies, and what looks like a Conestoga wagon or covered wagon out there. What can you tell us about those?
Yes, the one large wagon that we have, it seats about 12 people, and it used to take all the people that came into Lakeside into Julian. It took 12 hours for that wagon to take 12 people from Lakeside to Julian.
My goodness, how times have changed. And the kids think they have it rough now. Now, when your father was first getting started and putting this all together, there was another benefactor from San Diego who came along. He was the owner of San Diego Trust and Savings. Can you give us some details?
Yes, Mr. Thomas W. Sefton stopped by to see my dad one time and introduced himself, and my dad took him all the way through the museum and told him what he intended to do. And Mr. Sefton said, Guy, tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to donate my mining equipment to the museum, which he did later on.
Yeah, and your father started this back in the 1980s or so, and then I understand that after he passed on and after Mr. Sefton passed on, the mantle kind of fell to you, and you came along and went downtown to retrieve all the mining equipment.
Yes, we were very fortunate because the Sefton family gave me a call one day, and they said, Ken, I understand that our father promised to give you all of the mining equipment from the Colorado, California, Nevada gold mines. And I said, yes, he did. And they said, well, come down and get it.
What else did you find when you went down there?
First of all, they directed me to a warehouse next on Marina Boulevard, right next to the train tracks. And so I went down, knocked on the door, took a look, and the train tracks actually came into this large barn area, and Mr. Sefton's own personal railroad car was there.
What those very wealthy travelers used to use to go cross-country in the olden days. Now, he also donated some other interesting things. I see a tall ship replica down here. What else?
Well, in addition to the ship replica, it's difficult to believe, but he also donated the keys to Mount Vernon, George Washington's house. And that has always been a very interesting display.
Well, there you go. That's amazing. What else could people see that you would like people to know about the museum and the facilities here?
Well, the way the museum is put together, I think, is the most important, because all of a sudden the centerpiece is the Verlac House, built in 1886. You have a full-size basement, which is filled with beautiful artifacts. Then we have adorned on, my dad had brought in all of these buildings from the 1870s, and he reconstructed them here on the property. We're sitting in an old barn that was built in 1870.
It's amazing. It's really one of those little-known treasures we have out here in East County that I think a lot of people don't know about and would love to visit if they could. Now, speaking of visiting, when is the museum open to the public?
The museum is open to the public as advertised Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 1 to 4 o'clock. However, the museum is also open Monday through Thursday. We have one of our workers here, and they will open up the museum to anyone that desires to come in during the week.
Well, that's a good tip for our listeners here at East County Magazine. I know it's run by a nonprofit organization. If people have maybe old artifacts out there from the Ramona area in their basements or attics, who would they get in touch with if they have something they may wish to donate?
They would get in touch with our main office here on the grounds and describe what they would like to donate to see if we can use it and see if it fits in. And that has been done. You'll be surprised at the number of artifacts that we have here that are local to Ramona.
Wonderful. So if you want to visit the museum, you can visit their website at www.woodwardmuseum.org. Ken, I want to thank you so much for joining us, and I'm going to give you the last word here. Is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know about the Woodward Museum or the history of Ramona?
Well, I think it's really interesting. We have people from all over the world going through this museum. People coming in to visit California, they hear about the museum, they come up and they get a wonderful trip through the museum.
And it's located right on Main Street here in the heart of downtown Ramona today. Ken, I want to thank you very much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you very much, and it's been a delight talking to you.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Tune in on election night, Tuesday, November 8th, to KNSJ 89.1 FM. The station will be carrying live national election night coverage from 6 to 9 p.m. West Coast time with Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! After 9 p.m., you can hear state and local election reports, including an update from East County Magazine editor Miriam Raftery on the outcomes of races in San Diego's East County. Again, that's on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is a public service announcement from East County Magazine. In these winter months, you can receive free alerts via email or Twitter on your mobile phone about emergencies such as flash floods, road closures, heavy snow, and other severe weather alerts, as well as wildfires, traffic reports, and more. You can sign up for this free public service at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Our independent radio station, KNSJ, was launched on the 4th of July. Since then, KNSJ has added new local and syndicated programs. Now, we're working to build our news and investigative journalism team to bring you the many important stories you won't hear anywhere else. Stories that impact you, your family, your community, and our nation. Please donate to support KNSJ News at www.knsj.org. That's www.knsj.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
More than 480,000 voters in San Diego County had already returned their mail ballots as of 9 a.m. Sunday morning, according to the County Registrar Voters Office. More than 1.9 million mail ballots were sent to every registered voter in the county. The registrar is predicting a 60% to 65% county turnout for Tuesday's election. The number of registered voters in the county includes 1.9 million voters. Of those, about 800,000 of them are Democrats, 519,000 are Republicans, nearly 500,000 are nonpartisan, and about 119,000 are other parties. There's a total of 218 vote centers open across the county, both today and tomorrow, Election Day. Voters can still use their mail ballots as long as they are placed in a drop box or postmarked by Election Day. And if you want to know where your vote centers are located near you, you can go to sdvote.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show. This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor at eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.